my disclosure slide that I'm sharing with Gino this morning. Thank you. I have nothing to disclose. It's great to be here, and today I'm going to be talking about a project that we've been working on through CDC funding that Gino has just reviewed on the assessment of capacity of local health departments to address the health impacts of climate change. Suzanne Condon is here and is the principal investigator of this and really has the vision behind this work. I just kind of crank it out. So, and she's here to answer all the difficult questions, so I really appreciate that. So very briefly, I'm going to just give a little background on climate change and health in Massachusetts, the work we've been doing to inform that results, and these are preliminary results of our survey work. They have not been finalized yet. And then a summary and next steps related to the implementation of the BRACE framework, as Gino had mentioned. So first, let me just give you some background. In 2008, Massachusetts, the governor of Massachusetts, Deval Patrick, signed the Global Warming Solutions Act. There were two key components of that. One was mitigation, where it was requirements to reduce greenhouse gases below 1990 levels, and also a clean energy and climate plan for 2020. We were one of the few states in the country that had specific greenhouse gas emission reduction requirements. In addition to that, there was an adaptation section, and that required convening a committee to prepare a report to the legislature to analyze strategies for adapting to predicted impacts of climate change. The Massachusetts Climate Change Adaptation Report, which informed much of our initial work on our project, was issued in 2011. Michael Salona, a colleague of mine in the Environmental Toxicology Program, co-chaired the Health and Human Welfare panel of this report, and this report is available online. The major areas that were identified by in the EEA report are listed here, and all of these were reviewed in the report, and there were strategies that were developed for addressing them. Two interesting aspects of climate change related impacts that have happened since the report came out is one, the increased geographic distribution of potential mosquito related diseases. For the first time we're seeing them now throughout the state of Massachusetts. They were originally primarily in the southeastern part, but now we're getting detections all the way out into the western part of the state. And then also there was an extensive closure of oyster beds this past summer and early fall that is one of the first times that that has happened to such an extent from a Vibrio parahemolyticus bacteria related in some ways to increased water temperature. So as Gino mentioned, we received an award from the CDC to, this is the Category 1 Capacity Award, and we used it to evaluate and assess capacity of local health to respond to climate change impacts. We did this by developing and administering a survey to local health officials in three areas, and I'm going to be reviewing kind of quickly today some of the results of that related to the community's characteristics, baseline operations and communication systems, and perceptions of climate change. It's important to note that unlike many states in the United States that have county-level health, public health programs, Massachusetts has local boards of health for each of the 351 communities, so we have a more extensive need to outreach to each of these communities when we're working with them. So here are the results of the preliminary results of our climate change survey. We had a statewide response rate of 65%, and it ranged from 55 up to 81%. Now I'm going to just go through four slides that present the results of the perception of local health officials. And we essentially asked them these four questions related to what they believe to be their experience right now with climate change and health. The first one, in the next 20 years, is it likely that your jurisdiction will experience one or more serious public health problems? And 60% believe that they would that would happen. In the second one, we asked them if they were prepared to deal with public health effects of climate change, and has that been identified as an important priority in their health department, and 24% said that it was, 69% said that it had not been identified. The third is, do you believe that the community has adequate resources to address public health as a result of climate change, and 57% disagreed with that. And then finally, do you believe your community's health department staff has the expertise to assess the potential health impacts? And this relates to their capacity, and 62% disagreed that they have that expertise. So this identified some critical capacity gaps that we can address in our work. For community characteristics, we ask questions regarding drinking water and sewage and cooling centers. In the first case, for sources of drinking water, we have over 70% of the jurisdictions that responded have multiple sources, but the main ones are private wells and municipal groundwater. For sewage treatment, again, there's multiple systems within communities. In this case, though, septic is a major one. And, of course, in both cases, flooding can impact these systems, and it's important for us to understand that at the community level. We asked about air conditioning availability. And majority of local health officials did not have information about the percent of residential air conditioning in their communities. Very interesting area that we need further information on. We also asked about air conditioning in schools. And as you may know, schools are typically used as shelters, so it's important during any kind of emergency or extreme weather conditions that schools are prepared to deal with various heat, for example, extreme heat conditions, but we know that 51% or so of the schools in Massachusetts have air conditioning, so this is another area that we need further information. We asked about the knowledge of local health departments about the percentage of vulnerable residents in their community, and it appears that many of those that responded do have 58% believe that they know the elderly in their community. But for the other areas that we believe could be affected by climate change impacts, there's a much lower percentage, and again, an area that we would like to be able to provide additional information, and I'll talk a little bit about that at the end. Adequate capacity of local health departments to address health care services for the chronically ill residents, as you can see, among all of the different areas along the bottom that that public health and local health deal with, the areas in most need were heat waves, droughts, and health care services. Methods used by local health departments to communicate. As you can see here, a very interesting response here. Community website was a critical one in local newspapers. It was, in fact, their feedback on this that in times when the electricity grid is down during extreme weather events, it's going to be difficult to communicate with residents by website. So it was something that they identified that they would like to have more support on. Another important area that Gino had mentioned, capacity of communities to contact vulnerable populations. And again, we do see that the those that responded to the survey have a sense of the elderly, and in this case, mobility disorders, but along the other more chronic, those with chronic illnesses, they have less information. And so it is certainly a critical need to get that information to our local health partners. A community use of surveillance data to monitor the prevalence of public health impacts. And this really reflects the fact that local health do have an existing infrastructure to address some of those, many of the areas that will be affected by climate change. But again, we through the survey, we've been able to identify areas where additional support can be needed. And as you can see, certainly the last four at the bottom, extreme heat, respiratory issues, indoor air quality, and outdoor air quality are all areas that they can use additional work in. And I should mention the Bureau of Environmental Health is involved in all these particular areas, and we are working to increase that capacity. Gino did mention about the environmental public health tracking. I should say that the first session this morning that I attended also emphasized the importance of this source of information. So if you don't know about it, please, there's the website URL at the bottom there. We have a very cool one in Massachusetts. But we did ask the local health officials what their familiarity is with health surveillance data, and they, About 40% were familiar with the EPHT data, Environmental Public Health Tracking Portal in Massachusetts and also the national one. But importantly, will access to public health surveillance data be useful? And of course, overwhelmingly, they said that that data are. So we continue to work on this. We have a we are enhancing our tracking portal right now, and we have a leaf, an additional new leaf, and you'll know what I'm talking if you go on, for climate change, and we're going to be putting a lot of information in there. So let me just summarize the highlights of our preliminary findings. Over two-thirds of those that participated in the survey had plans or felt that they had the capacity to develop plans to address foodborne disease, storm responses, and freshwater availability and safety. And this really, again, relates to the fact, and this is kind of internationally now recognized, that the public health infrastructure does exist to address this, but the need for additional resources and capacity will certainly be needed. However, plans for populations that may be impacted by climate change effects, such as those vulnerable, the young and old, to respiratory disease, et cetera, need further attention. We also found that about half of the local health officials that responded to the survey believe that they have adequate resources to address heat waves. Over 50% of the school systems have air conditioning, and half of those responded are drafting plans for cooling centers. About half of those reported have or are developing specific adaptation plans for local flood zones and plans to place for evacuation of vulnerable populations, and that's primarily through the emergency planning work. However, there is an overall belief that local health departments are unprepared and under-resourced and lack the expertise to adequately respond to extreme weather events. And then finally, about one-third of the respondents indicated that their community had an initiative in place to mitigate the impacts of climate change. However, there is a need to coordinate local government officials and better integrate local health planning, preparedness, and adaptation strategies. And that leads very nicely into what our next, we did receive funding and called Category 2, which is the BRACE framework. And we are moving forward with the results of this survey and gap analysis to determine best areas to support local health capacity to address climate change impacts. We are going to be communicating the findings of our capacity assessment through a final statewide report that will be coming out. We also have been making presentations and have had a regional symposia. We have held two already, and we plan on having more in the next year. Going back to Gino's presentation, we are in the process of implementing the BRACE framework, which is developing the climate profile and population vulnerability maps, which we've already started to do. And then we will be working on assessing potential health burdens and developing the evidence-based interventions. We are providing training on data access to our Environmental Public Health Tracking Portal. And as the national portal continues to add more climate change measures to that portal, we will have this opportunity to share those with our local partners. I should mention to you that I think that we are one of the few states in the country that's promoting the use of health impact assessments to address climate change. It's an area, as has been discussed certainly throughout this conference, that health impact assessment provides the opportunity to bring together multi-stakeholders that are involved in a number of different areas. And the need to address climate change requires people from all walks of life and all areas to be able to come together. So we are promoting this tool for local health decision-making process. And as I mentioned to you, we have our climate change webpage on our website. That's it. Thank you.